Hello and welcome to David's Biblical Talk. And today we're going to talk to Matthew K. Manning. He's written a humongous Batman Files book. It actually is called The Batman Files. It is out from Andrews and McMeel. It came out in October of this year. And it's a wonderful Christmas gift, and it weighs a ton, too. Hello, how are you?
Hey, not too bad.
How much does this book actually weigh?
I'm actually not sure. I've never put it on a scale.
I've got it here, and it must be 5 pounds. It must be close to 5 pounds. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid book.
Now, how long have you been a Batman fan?
I think ever since I can remember being a little kid, Batman was always my favorite in as far as superheroes go. And then when the 1989 movie, Tim Burton's movie, came out, that's when I became completely obsessed with him and started reading and collecting it about that point.
So you're a huge collector, too.
Yeah.
What is it about collecting Batman stuff that thrills you so much? I mean, I understand it, because once you get into something, it's really kind of thrilling to find as much as you can on that thing, on that kind of, but it must be exhausting at times.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I've spent a little bit too much money on the collection over the years, but it's just it's just a fun hobby, and it's something that they seem to never end, never-ending supply of Batman merchandise always coming out.
Now, somebody wanted me to ask you if Batman is more identifiable or globally identifiable than Superman. What do you think? What would you say to that?
Well, I think it kind of depends on a person's personality. It's kind of two schools of thought. There's a lot of people that can really identify with the Clark Kent's mentality as far as being. He's an alien, and Superman, but. He's raised in essentially in the Midwest by two farm folk parents, and kind of then ventured to the city, and so there's a lot of people that can identify with that kind of strong family values that Superman personifies. And but a lot of people feel that they can identify with Batman more just because of the fact that his origins are a little less grounded. I mean, they're a little less based in the world of science fiction, and they're more grounded in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
There's that school of thought that thinks that someone could actually be Batman if they trained hard enough and had enough money. Probably not, honestly, from the kinds of adventures he's gone through, and when you think about that part of the character. But the idea is still there that Batman's like the perfect human. Like, if you really did nothing else besides dedicating your life to this, it's something obtainable. So there's the school of thought that finds that a lot more relatable. I certainly did.
Well, the thing is, with Batman, he's got a lot cooler toys, for one thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so what does Superman have other than his X-ray vision? I mean, and strength. I mean, what he doesn't have any, really. He doesn't have a car. He doesn't have a cave.
Yeah, in the comics throughout the years, they've given Superman gadgets every once in a while. It just doesn't make any sense for the character. He's essentially so powerful and, has so many different abilities. I think that's the that's the appeal to Superman, is that he does have all these powers that you would love to have. Like, he can fly, he can see through walls, anything you can really think of. Superman was essentially the first superhero, so they kind of gave him everything,
Yeah.
And then other heroes only had a little bit of that. And Batman was created more in the pulp mindset, where he was a vigilante and there's been a couple characters like him before, but just no one caught on as well as he did.
Now, this book—it's just humongous. I mean, the scope of this book—I can't even describe it. You really have to look at it yourself. I mean, it starts out with the Wayne double murder, the newspaper article, which is spread across 2 pages from the Gotham City Herald, and it's just—that's about Batman's parents being murdered, correct?
Yes, and that's actually the first thing that we did for the book. We needed a couple pieces before we even really got finished with the outline, and I said, well, one of the things we need to include is the newspaper where Bruce's parents were killed, because that's something he would definitely hold on to. So we made that, and then at the same time, we made there's a movie ticket stub for the movie that Bruce Wayne went to, that apparently he kept the movie stub over the years, and so we decided to include that as well. And those are two of the first, artifacts, we'd called them.
Now,
that we created for the
book. Now, you work for DC Comics also?
I do. I'm a freelance writer, so I work from home, and I work for DC or Marvel
I mean, how does anybody, suppose somebody wanted to be an illustrator, how in the world would they even get into DC Comics? I mean, what's the criteria? What would you do?
Well, for the illustration, it's actually a little bit easier than for writing. For illustration, you know, people go to comic conventions, they have portfolio reviews, and editors take a look at the work, and a good editor can tell if your work's up to snuff almost immediately from looking at your pages. And, you know, especially if you have, you know, if your portfolio hits all the right points and has all the, showing off your ability to tell stories with sequential art. For writing, it's a lot tougher because no one's going to sit down with a script. And actually, DC and Marvel are not allowed to read a script from you. Like, they can only read comics that you've already had published through another company.
Right.
And, you know, kind of learn from you that way. Actually, these days, DC and Marvel are mostly recruiting from Hollywood. A lot of TV show writers are starting to write comic books as well.
And authors, too. Brad Meltzer's doing some, and he's a thriller writer, and he's doing some.
Greg Rucka was another person that was recruited from the literary market, I guess. And but, yeah, so it kind of depends on, you know, it's a little harder for these days for...
Well, you do the writing, right, of the story.
Right.
So is there certain criteria that, now, I mean, you're writing in here. I mean, there's just so much in here. I mean, it's amazing what's in this book. I mean, you've got, how long did it take you to put this whole thing together? I mean, this is a massive effort.
The actual working on the book itself is probably around 6 months, but actually a little less for the writing itself. I wish we had more time, but it was a lot of 7 days a week. Work weeks, just because, you know, I wanted to make sure the book was as thorough as possible, and I wanted it to be as entertaining as possible, too. With a lot of these, they've done a lot of file projects before, like in comic book form, and they've done, like, encyclopedias, and I've worked on several of those books. And while I like a lot of those, the problem is that if you're going to sit to read, there's no real temptation to read it cover to cover. And so this book, I really wanted to tell, like, excerpts from stories people hadn't heard before, and I wanted to make it... That's why we did a lot of journal entries in Bruce Wayne's voice, because I wanted to make it as fun as possible to read. Like, I don't want people just to read it because they want to learn everything there is about Batman. I mean, that's obviously the motivation, but I want them to be entertained the whole time they're doing it, like they're reading, a novel or different, a whole bunch of short stories, essentially.
Right. Exactly. Well, you think of the old TV show, and that's the first thing that goes through my head when I think of Batman, because I grew up with that. And it was such a comedy. I mean, they made it into a comedy. I mean, was that what they intended with? And it's interesting how they call it the Batman today, whereas it was just Batman back then. I just remember it being Batman, and nobody ever said the Batman back then.
Right.
That I remember. I mean,
well, it kind of depends. Like, he actually started out as the Batman in 1939.
Oh, he did. Okay.
And there's even a hyphen in the name. And then they kind of, depends on the writers. If you're telling a gritty or shadowy or a noir kind of story, you're going to use the a little bit more often. You know, it just kind of depends on, you know, the character's self. They actually made a joke about it in the movie Batman Returns. The 1960s show was meant to be a comedy when it was released. And the interesting part about that, it appealed to kids and parents as well. And you found so many kids taking it completely serious. Like, so it just worked so well. It's kind of like the American Idol of the day, because it was on twice a week. And it was only lasted three seasons, but on twice a week, that's the equivalent of a six-season show for most. You know,
it certainly left its mark. I mean, people just loved the show. I mean, Adam West's career is still going. I don't know how old he is. He must be close to 80 by now, but he's still going strong.
And it stated, it is something that really... Because in the comics at that time, it wasn't that far off from what was going on in the comics. They weren't as played for laughs as much. It was more, but in the 1950s, we got some crazy science fiction stories, and there was a lot of family element to it. There was a Batwoman and a Batgirl that were introduced, and there was just a variety of you know, zany characters and hijinks that were happening. So it wasn't near as serious as in when you got into the 70s. They started to darken it a bit more. And then the 1980s came with Frank Miller, wrote The Dark Knight Returns, which made everybody want to do dark and gritty Batman comics, and it's kind of stayed a little in that world, depending on the writer, you know, but throughout the rest of the modern age of comics, as they call it.
Well, who's done the most for Batman, do you think? Was it Frank Miller, or maybe Neil Adams, or Danny O'Neill, or who do you think's done the most?
It's really kind of hard to just put it to one person. I would say that each generation kind of had their most important people. The 70s definitely had Denny O'Neill, the writer, and a few other writers there that were just as important. It was And, but yeah, the 80s, and what, when people think of modern Batman, they're pretty much thinking of Frank Miller's interpretation. You're thinking of Batman Year One, that he, Frank Miller, got to retell Batman's origin, and then Batman The Dark Knight Returns, where he got to tell the last Batman story, essentially. So they were so influential. It's one of the, Batman origin is one of the very few origins that has not been rewritten in the last, you know, since it came out, which is, what, over 20 years ago now. So it's, or about, yeah, over 20 years.
Well, you, and here you've got the, you've got the Batcave, the Batmobile. I think even the Batplane and the Batwing are in here too, right?
Oh yeah,
they're all. Whose designs are these originally? Who designed the Batmobile and the Batcave and all this?
These are actually the Batmobile is kind of a process. So it was. It's been around almost since the beginning. The first. Technically, Batmobile was just a red, like, coupe that was in the car. I mean, it was in the comics. And it slowly started to, over the years, it developed with fins and a giant bat head on the front. The designs we used in particular are kind of, we try to use as many as possible, and we wanted to use as much art as people hadn't seen before.
Right.
But while we did take a lot of art from the comics, for instance, the Batmobiles, those are actually schematics that were done for toys. So we had the DC archives, and they were comic accurate toys. And so we said, well, let's just use these blueprints because they look like actual blueprints. And so it's things like that that readers have never seen before because they just haven't been published.
Now, a lot of this stuff has never been seen before.
A lot of the work, yeah. There's, for instance, the bat boat that we show in there was a commissioned piece by an artist named Freddie Williams Jr. And he's currently, I believe, the artist on Captain Atom for DC right now.
Right.
So he's really great with schematics and those kind of things. So we had him do that piece. We had him do a utility belt piece and Wayne Tower and a lot of other.
It doesn't sound like you can be a slouch and work for DC Comics.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like they put them all to work pretty extensively.
Yeah, it's pretty, a lot of the jobs, especially comic artist jobs, are incredibly labor intensive. People don't really realize how much work goes into a comic page itself. It's just, like when you consider the I guess the most comparable field is illustration, where you only do one drawing, and that's supposed to tell an entire story. Where comics, every single panel has to tell an entire story in itself. So, and you're putting maybe, you know, somewhere between like 1 to 9 panels on a page sometimes. So it's definitely a full time job.
What was the hardest thing about doing this book? I mean, what did you struggle with?
This particular book, the time frame itself would have, I think that's probably the biggest thing. There wasn't really it wasn't very hard for me, just because essentially all the comics I talk about in here, all the stories that we talk about, I'd already read. So that was just, you know, for fun for the most part. So it was kind of a lot of going back and rereading or looking through some of the comics that I've already read. We have my collection here, and I guess the challenge of that was, for the journal entries especially, was to find a part of the story that hadn't been elaborated on enough, or just some sort of interesting thing that we could kind of dig into to tell a new angle for this familiar story, to kind of make it seem as fresh for the reader.
I'm looking at the designs for the Batman. This is on, I don't know what page this is. But it's just, it's fascinating. This whole book is fascinating. I mean, you look at the Batman designs, and you can almost see Adam West's face peering through some of these. But there's a note from Alfred, and there's Alfred there with a bald Alfred, and much different than we saw him in the TV show.
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of differences, you know, throughout, a lot of different interpretations of the character.
I don't Michael Caine's version of Alfred is kind of, you know, I don't know, I'm sure, at some level I like it, at some level I don't think it's real. It's not what I really pictured Alfred being looking like.
It's a little different. He's a little more youthful, and he's not as refined, I guess, as a lot of the other...
He doesn't have as great of a sense of humor. He's got more of a real drier sense of humor.
Yeah. and Alfred in the comics does have a really good sense of humor. One of the best interpretations of him was the Batman the Animated Series, that Bruce Timm worked in, Paul Dini and several, lots of other people worked on for Warner Brothers in the early 90s. And most of the characters done for that, they were just like spot on to the comics. And I think that was just, it was a great voice casting. It was great, you know, pretty much great everything.
Now, has there been a story, that a definitive story written with Joker, the Joker as a villain? I mean, Joker's been featured in some of the stuff, but has there ever been a story written like that?
Well, I think most people would think the most definitive Joker story itself is Batman the Killing Joke, and mm-hmm. it's written by Alan Moore, who also wrote Watchmen and From Hell. And
how many stories is the Joker in? I mean, is he in a bunch? I mean,
hundreds. I couldn't tell you offhand. He's been ever since the late 1930s, or always maybe 1940, I think, when he first debuted in Batman issue number one.
To me, he's the best villain on the TV show, Cesar Ramirez.
Most people have just, thought he was just the greatest character, villain ever for Batman, and he's just been featured. He's definitely been featured more than any other villain. And
I mean, you can imagine Jack Nicholson's glee when they gave him that role. He must have had a field day with that role, because it's just such a tremendous... And you're just upset when he dies, really, because he's never going to come back again.
Yeah.
Although, you never know in the Batman world, or any of the comic books.
And then Heath Ledger's performance in Dark Knight just got so much acclaim.
It was so really different.
It
was so different than Jack Nicholson's.
Which is great. I mean, for me, when I go see a Batman movie, I've read so many comics, I want to see something that I haven't seen in the comics before. I mean, I'd like it to stay true to the comics as far as the mood and the theme and, some of the characters themselves, like the root of the characters, but it's great when they take it a different way, and I think he just did a good job with that.
When you do this, and this, am I right in something, it was something about the way that what this book is made out of is like real, is it real leather?
It's not leather. We actually,
or
we
what
went
is
over
it?
The material, we worked on that a lot, actually. The designer, the packager for us, the Lionheart Books, Michael Reagan over there, just really kind of obsessed over the cover for the longest time. We wanted a material that wasn't quite leather, but something like high-tech, like that Batman would put on his scrapbook to protect it kind of thing. Like, 'cause this is his, these are the most important files of Batman collected by Batman himself.
The emblem on the front cover is just tremendous. I love this emblem.
Right. Yeah. And we went over this design a lot and kind of worked it. That's why there's actually, you were mentioning there's no, you couldn't find the page number earlier because there is no page numbers and there is no table of contents. And actually, I'm only mentioned as right at the end, on the last page tacked on there, because the idea is to replicate it so it looks just like what Batman would have, to keep create that reality.
And these drawings of Gotham City are just fantastic. I mean,
those are Anton Furst's drawings, and he was actually the production designer for the 1989 Tim Burton Batman film.
That's really cool.
And when he did those designs for the movie, people were just blown away. DC was blown away by them. And so they actually commissioned him to do comic book versions of Gotham City. And he did all these different buildings and things that are still used in the comics to this day. And it's just, he kind of created like a unique feel for Gotham and some of the most impressive stuff.
Yeah. Now, here's a Gotham City map. And I wonder if in the new movie, I think there's a new movie coming, what, in the spring or summer?
This summer.
I wonder if in that they're going to actually use some of these locations and mention them during. I mean, do they keep to that when they do the movies?
They have. The newer movies, the Christopher Nolan movies in particular, have used several Gotham locations. But they did. He did make up his own area. They made up an area called the Narrows, which is supposed, I guess, under Gotham. They kind of have this, two-storied approach to Gotham as a city. So they've used some certain locations and things like that, but they also can go. They also go off on their own way as well. So the comics have been, especially when Denny O'Neil, after being such an influential writer in the 70s and 80s even, and then he became the main Batman editor, and under his ship, it was a very tight ship as far as under his leadership there. It was a very he just ran a very tight ship as far as everything. The city was all the same locations in the city. All the designs were the same. It was he really tried to get that sense of continuity to get more of a believable world to Gotham City, and the comics just benefited from that for over a decade.
Now there's newer Batman villains. I mean, it used to be the Joker, the Riddler, or the Penguin, Mr. Freeze, and all this. But now there's like a Harley Quinn. Am I right? And some other. Do you think those villains are going to stick around? I mean, do you think they're going to be as memorable as the old ones, and will they last?
I mean, Harley actually is a great example of one that is. I mean, she's actually been around since the early 90s, And so she's already kind of proved her staying power, and fans just go crazy for her. She has, there's been a lot of merchandise produced for her and that kind of thing. You always see, you see Harley Quinn's at Halloween and things, but she's one that's been staying. There's several that have been around for a while. The character Bane, who's going to use the main villain in this upcoming movie, is a newer, he's newer, he's from the 90s as well. And
who's going to play Bane? Do we know?
Oh, actually, they actually have showed the trailer already. For some reason, right now, I can't remember his name.
Okay, well, if you think of it, you can mention it.
Yeah, he's, I mean, he was in Inception as well, Chris Nolan's movie Inception. Oh, Tom Harding, that's his name.
Oh, Tom Harding, okay.
And so, yeah, they just actually, they showed, I think the second trailer just debuted, as well as a six-minute, in front of the new Mission Impossible movie, there's a six-minute prologue to the film, which is the first, I guess, the first couple minutes of the new movie. So people are kind of getting a taste for what it's going to be like.
And all your stuff, I assume you have rooms of stuff that you've collected?
Right now, a lot of my stuff is in storage, in our basement.
So you don't let anybody touch it?
No, it's just all in tubs and, you know, organized. It used to be my parents' place for the longest time, and then we finally, we lived in, up until last year, we were in a small Brooklyn apartment, so it's not a, wasn't really great for a comic book. I always have my comic books, but my other, you know, my other Batman merchandise was never really there.
Do you have a favorite story? Do you have one that you think is the worst? Do you have one that thinks it's the most moving stories? I mean, as far as Batman's concerned, what are your...
The problem with that, most of my picks are pretty much a lot of other people's picks, unfortunately. I really do. Dark Knight Returns is my favorite Batman story, just because it's has such an epic feel to it, and it's just this, it's this great moody work, and it's just really fun, and it kind of just exemplifies this, you know, a grizzled, this is Batman when he's already retired, he's in his 50s, and he's coming back, and it's just a great, cynical Batman. And I also love Batman Year One as well. Just the origin story, it's just, I remember reading these, I think I read them at exactly the right age, around when I was in, like, fifth grade or so, and that's kind of, that kind of sticks with you. They said, I guess the saying is, like, the golden age of sci-fi is 12, so I was right at that influential age that it kind of, you know, changed my world, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. So, but yeah, there's been several since that have really, you know, I found to be pretty powerful stories as well. They're just, there's been a lot.
Now, what in the original stories, was there a Batgirl, or did they add that for the TV show?
Well, the Batgirl everyone knows was around the time of the TV show. There's a little bit of a... it was essentially DC heard that they wanted to include a Batgirl in the 60s show for the third season, and so they went ahead and made up their own first, and that's where you get the Commissioner Gordon's daughter, Batgirl. They're actually, in the 1950s, they did debut an earlier Batgirl. It was just not as popular, and that she was actually the sidekick of Batwoman, who also was not as popular. And so the characters, they have been around for a while. There's a lot of history to some of these minor characters that people aren't aware of how long, you know, they've been around in comics themselves.
Right. You don't really have a one you don't like, a story of Batman that you don't like.
There's been plenty I haven't liked, really. I don't like to name too many names, but there's been a couple times where they've tried to redo with continuity. Like, there was a recent attempt to do a new version of the Joker's origin story, and
right.
it just wasn't what I mean. It wasn't I wasn't happy with it. The original, and I'm glad it didn't really catch on with anybody else either. So, because then, since the 1950s, Joker's origin has been that he was in this he fell in this vat of acid to become the Joker, and while he was on this crime spree as this other criminal called the Red Hood, and I didn't like to see that altered, and most other people didn't either. So it's kind of back the way it is now.
Now, this is, I think, a picture of Wayne Manor here toward the beginning of the book. I assume this is Wayne Manor. Or is this the Batcave? I think there's...
Oh, yeah, we have a couple images of Wayne Manor. We actually commissioned a new piece from Freddie Williams for that as well, for the Wayne Manor. We also had him commissioned a piece of what the Batcave looked like before there was anything in it. So it's like an ancient... the idea is it's an ancient drawing that someone that used to live in Wayne Manor, one of Bruce Wayne's ancestors, did. And So it's kind of, that's something else that fans have never seen before, what an empty Batcave was.
You really can't describe the detail in these drawings. It's just amazing. I mean, this is going to make a great Christmas gift for a lot of people. I mean, it's just an amazing book. And you really, to get the full effect of it, you really have to just sit and just look at it. And you can look at it for hours on end. I mean, there's so much. I was looking at it last night and just... You know, how do you see, I mean, here's a training schedule. Is this Batman's training schedule?
Yeah, that's an excerpt from it. So it's not what he would do every week, but it's I actually met with a physical trainer, a friend of mine named Chris Fox, and we discussed what's the craziest workout routine you can possibly imagine, and then I just increased that. And it was actually Men's Fitness actually had interviewed a different personal trainer to see if they could. If this is actually something Batman could do every week. I think the consensus was that he couldn't do this and fight crime at the same time. So, which would make sense. This, I mean, it could be something that he did before he became Batman. We kind of leave it ambiguous enough that it's kind of up to people. People don't realize that it has been established in the comics that Batman just really doesn't sleep. He normally he'll sleep maybe a couple hours, but he has these meditation techniques that he's learned all over Asia and during his travels, and he kind of employs that to give his body the rest that's needed, which I'm sure takes a mental toll on him, but,
a little crazy. Apparently, Batman's still popular today. I have people come into the bookstore and they ask for the Batman comic, so it's definitely something. I used to love on the TV show where they have riddles and he'd have to figure out the riddles and what they meant, and I guess that was only done in the Riddler.
They still do that on time. I've written some Batman comics as well. I did an issue of Batman Strikes that actually it was all riddle based, and it was kind of, which was a lot of fun. That's why a lot of writers still really enjoy the Riddler. We actually, in the Batman Files, we included we actually commissioned a piece to do to replicate what Riddler's first riddle from the comics actually looks like. So, and I think that turned out really great.
Can't even tell me what page it's on because they're not numbered here.
Not so,
be looking at it for a while trying to. Here's
the front. Yeah, it was done all in cutout letter style as like a ransom note, and that was George Crisillo, really of Design Monsters, actually did some amazing work like that for us. He did a poster for the Flying Graysons, which is Robin's parents when they died. He did a poster for that circus act, and he did a death certificate for the second Robin when he dies. And so there's just a lot of great commission pieces by him. He made some really, and they're very realistic, and they're very very nice to look at the same time. So.
Now we talked about whether Batman or Superman was more globally popular, but what does it mean to you? What does Batman mean to you? As a single family, why is it that you like Batman more than Superman, and why? I mean, what is it about Batman that so thrills you?
I think what's interesting about Batman is he has that the idea that you can kind of live vicariously through how he's this rich playboy that has this double side. I remember when I was a kid, got me through a lot of say family reunions or piano recitals or things you didn't want to be at, where you could just imagine that you had this secret life, which is one of the greatest parts about all superheroes, is that, not all, but many, is the secret identity aspect that really kind of inspires kids. But I think it was probably a combination of everything, kind of like that dark creature of the night that I've always found very interesting, that this, how ridiculously driven he is mm-hmm. He's an inspiring character is that way. You don't really want to be him because no one would want their life to be that horrible as far as, everything he sacrifices to become Batman. But it's this idea that how he can put his all into something and really just, and he always comes out on top, even when compared to the other Justice League characters. There's always some sort of he's surrounded by all these really super powerful people, and he's just kind of the one that's, he knows he's in control at all times. He always has several plans going on in his head, and that's a very interesting character.
Well, it's interesting. Superman's actually in this
yeah.
book too, which is what people would say, why Superman in a Batman book? But
yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, we did try to make it as true to the DC universe as possible, that the comics, the universe the comics have set up. And they have, they teamed up dozens of times, hundreds of times, actually, by this point. Even since the 1940s, Batman and Superman have been a team-up at least featured on the comics covers together. And it's so one of the interesting things was writing a Batman, because another thing we have in the book are a lot of computer files from the Batcave computer, supposedly. So we'll have Batman taking notes on all the characters. So with Superman, it's like this. That was a really fun one for me to write, and it was mostly like saying, you know, Superman is this very noble guy. I respect him. You know, talking about how really he just think he would never tell him to his face, but he thinks the world of this guy. And then all of a sudden, then at the end of the file, he's like, and here's how we kill him if we have to. You know, kind of like just this paranoid mind of Batman where he realizes how powerful this guy is, and if he ever gets out of line, Batman has to have a way to stop him.
Right now, I'm looking at the Joker drawings. This is a very dark Joker. Not like we remember on more the Heath Ledger type than the Joker
on
TV.
I mean, it's much earlier than Heath Ledger as far as that darkness. That would have come in even in the 1970s with Denny O'Neill. He did a comic called The Joker's Five-Way Revenge where Joker became the... And that's actually the character's root. The character was a murderer from the beginning in the 1930s or 1940s. And he was just... I mean, he was a really dark, twisted character. And then what you find is that the comics got lighter in tone. And the main reason of that is because of the comics code, mm-hmm. which was during, you know, the whole McCarthyism and all the terrified families, you know, they're worried that that their kids were reading these, you know, this material in comics that wasn't appropriate. And so there was actually an effort made to ban all comic books, and rather than do that, the company sat down and said, okay, we're going to regulate ourselves. We have this other company called the Comic Code. They regulated all the books and said, all right, this is appropriate, you know. And so these characters that were murderers just became criminals. And they got lighter and lighter until finally the comic code was more lax and lax, and you can get away with more and more and more. And so, and like in the 70s, Danny O'Neill brought the Joker back to being this killer. And now the comics code is a thing of the past. It's not even actually on the books anymore.
I'm looking at the Mad Monk. Is that one of the villains? Are there a lot of Batman villains in here?
Oh, yeah, there's... We tried to hit as many villains as possible.
There's the Riddler, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of my Michael Reagan there, my designer there, wasn't very happy because we tried to keep a consistent art style throughout the book, the more modern art, and I was, or more modern art style, and I was asking for characters from the 1970s who really haven't been in the comics much, so we kind of had to like figure out what, you know, what artwork can look the most appropriate, and I was kind of a pain to him because of that, because I really wanted to get as many minor characters as possible, because that's a lot of the fun. Mm-hmm. Batman has just an amazing rogues gallery. Even in the 1960s TV show, there were so many rogues for that, and there's been so many more after it.
Now, did you, everything written here in the book, is this the first time it's ever been in print, or did you write it for other things too?
No, this is all the first time everything, pretty much everything. There's a couple schematic or two that will be... that are, it's from another source material, like there's a Batcave in there that I did for Batman issue number 700 in the back of that,
mm-hmm.
but even that, the words are, it's not even word for word, so there's only a couple things, like a couple schematics that people have seen that, but everything else was written for this. There's a, like some of the stories themselves are mm-hmm. going to be familiar as far as, it'll be a scene from a story that's elaborated on, someone's, from a famous story or something, like, say, Batman Year One, we elaborate on a lot of the scenes from that to help tell his origin. But there's also a lot of new stories that are, like, there's a Penguin entry. We kind of tell the Penguin's origin a little bit, like Batman's first encounter with him.
I wasn't real impressed with Danny DeVito's Penguin performance in the Batman
movie. Yeah, it was a bit different than the...
quite a bit different.
Yeah, and it was even different from the comics at that time. So what they did was, later on, actually, they've kind of kept a little bit of that, like, some of his rugged... like, or some of that kind of uncouth behavior, I guess, mm-hmm. and they still incorporated that a little bit in the comics, but he's still the way to make, because Penguin was such a silly character when he was introduced, it's very hard to keep him keep modern audiences interested in him, so they've kind of made him more of, he's kind of a crime boss these days, where he kind of sits in his office, he doesn't really fight Batman with umbrellas, he's more of a behind the scenes guy that organizes all these things, and it makes him a much more threatening character.
Yeah, this two-page spread of the Batwing is amazing. I mean, it's just really cool to look at.
Oh yeah, that's another thing that we found from the DC archives. So that was something that we're like, oh, this is perfect. We need a great Batwing schematic, and this is, I think, I actually forget the artist that did that one, but I think it's actually.
It doesn't say it on the drawing, does it?
No, that's another thing too. I would have loved to credit every artist and everything in there, but to keep the believability of the book, we couldn't have an index saying this was drawn by this and this and this. You know, if we like, there's not actually an admission. Like, I never admit that I actually wrote the book. So I figure, well, if I'm not really getting credit, you know, hopefully everybody else will make this, won't mind the sacrifice of trying to make this as believable, you know, as Batman's Journal as possible.
Well, you're listed as the author, though.
Not on the book itself. I'm a.
But if we look on Amazon or something, it actually says your name.
I'll say I'm the author. Yeah, but it's essentially I just read an afterword in this book because the conceit of the book is I discovered this, you know, on my doorstep, you know, and we kind of, you know, use that as the fictional history of the book to make it a little bit more fun.
What do you think people are going to think is the coolest in the whole book? And I want to ask you about these the tragedies. There's a lot of tragedy with all these. I mean, Robin lost his parents. Batman lost his parents in a tragic. I mean, there seems to be some tragic history for all these characters.
Oh, yeah, it's actually kind of. I mean, essentially, especially in the 1940s and 1930s, there was. I mean, everything was like horribly tragic. It was almost all the origin of characters there that were popular, at least. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Superman lost his whole planet, and then and actually. In the old days, Superman's parents also died when he was younger. So they weren't around. Like, in these days, his mom's still alive. And actually, they're redoing the continuity, so I'm not even sure if that's true anymore. But but there was just, like, everybody, everybody was orphans, it seemed like. Even, like, there was characters like Captain Marvel, who was insanely popular in the 1940s. And, you know, we're talking comics that would sell in the millions back then for Captain Marvel, this character that a lot of people don't even know about today. Which and the new generation doesn't really know this Shazam character that was popular.
What do you think? And what do you think is going to excite people the most in this book?
Oh, about the I don't. I think kind of what I'm hoping. I mean, what would excite me as a fan looking at it is how comprehensive it is. I think if you're a diehard Batman fan, you're going to look at this and you're going to be excited because of the fact that like everybody's touched on, you know, and there's all these things you haven't ever seen before. Whereas
right.
A lot of the books that I've worked on in the past, we, you know, unfortunately, it's like a lot of summaries of stories and histories and things, and people we've gotten good reviews on these books, but the thing is, they're not quite new material, and that's what I think a lot of people enjoy about this. And I think right. casual fans are just going to be overwhelmed by how much stuff that they don't know about this character, and I think it's fun, too, because it's easily a very browsable book. You can enjoy it just by keeping it on your coffee table and just looking at it every once in a while. You don't have to read it, but if you do read it, I really wanted to make sure that this was entertaining from start to finish.
And I'm looking at the Robin, the two-page Robin drawings. They're just amazing. I mean, these are just, I'm looking at these, especially one that almost looks a little, where he's flying through the air. It's an interesting drawing, because it's almost, in places, looks a little blurry, but that's what it's supposed to be, I think.
Oh, yeah, the artists, like Michael Reagan, the designers and such, they actually they altered a lot of the comic art itself, so there's a lot of blurring effects added to make them look more like photographs
right.
than it would in a comic, because not everything's in focus in a Polaroid photo, for instance. So.
Well, I wonder how long it takes them to do one individual drawing. I mean, the one of Robin flying through, how long would that have taken them, do you think?
It would depend on the artists themselves as far as, because each artist has a different process. Some guys can knock out a couple pages a day. Most guys cannot.
I mean, I'd love to see somebody sit down and just draw Batman.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
color
if,
in. I mean,
yeah.
That would be. There's something about the ability to draw that to me is really just something to watch. I mean.
Well, these days most things are most comics are done in almost an assembly line fashion. So there's someone like me that will be that writes the script, and then there's someone else that comes in and just draws in pencil.
Right.
And sometimes that artist will ink his own work and go over it in ink and add more texture and background, or sometimes there'll be an inker, and then sometimes there's normally a different colorist that comes in, there's normally a different letterer.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's such a process that so many, like most, a lot of guys will do one pencil page a day, and that's if they're really lucky. So that's, you know, depending on how many panels it is or, you know, what, how fast they're going. So it's definitely a long process, and it's very labor intensive, which I actually majored in the School of Visual Arts in New York City to be a comic book artist. I majored in cartooning and then just realized I lost interest in my own stories because the process takes so long to draw a page. And I never thought, I was never quite, you know, quite there as far as professional drawing either. So it was just more like I just wanted to tell stories, and I realized, oh, I guess I'm a writer.
Right.
It takes a special kind of person to be able to do all that.
Right. Here's a 2-page utility belt. This is really cool. See utility belt there. But I mean, are you working on stuff that's coming out anytime soon? Like in 2012, are you working on stories that are coming out? Are you allowed to talk about them or?
Actually, yesterday I finished the first draft of a new book a Spider-Man book for DK Publishing.
Wow!
It's not in the same vein. It's actually in a series that I did before. I did a Wolverine and Iron Man book for them. Two different.
Are we talking a $50 book, $100 book? I mean, is it an expensive book?
This is like a $25 book.
Okay.
But it's another. It's a complete history of the character from start to finish, kind of thing again.
Now, do you have any drawing ability yourself?
I do a little. I've actually, when I first started out, I did some comics that I actually drew a couple things in the back of, but they weren't like a DC or Marvel comic. This is like a self-published or a small company published books. So, and I really have kind of lost all of it. I don't really draw anymore at all. So,
no.
But
You're more in the creative process.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have a lot of Batman stories floating through your head even as we speak?
Oh yeah, I was actually working on one in the car today. So it's always, when I'm driving someplace, or you ever have a spare moment, I'm always brainstorming or thinking. Well, not always, but most of the time.
Right. Do you ever think of writing a Batman novel?
I wouldn't be opposed to it. I've never actually been given an opportunity for that. They actually haven't done. They used to do a little bit more of that in like the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And it's kind of really only the novels that DC publishes anymore are mostly. Adaptations of, say, like a comic story or a movie.
Right.
So, and that's just not as, it would be interesting to try to do one of those to really flesh out a lot of stuff, but it's not as appealing as doing your own thing. So I might have an opportunity soon to do something similar for a different company, but we'll have to see if that happens.
Now, in all the years of Batman, are there certain artists or creative people that you think have been overlooked?
There's always unsung heroes, and it's hard for Batman because he has such a strong fan base. So most of the people that have worked on Batman have gotten a lot of credit. There's some artists which I would have, or some writers, like I think Mike W. Barr is a great writer from the 80s who doesn't get as much credit as he probably should these days, and because there's other great guys, like even if you were great back then, there are other greater guys in the term of popularity and things at that time, and there's a couple Batman stories that they just don't get as much press, but I think even some of the guys that get a lot of credit, like Denny O'Neil, don't get enough credit for for how much they've done. Where see people say, oh, he made Batman a little darker in the 70s, that's great, but when you realize, oh, he's actually been he's been so important for Batman, pretty much ever since then, except for the last couple of years when he's retired. So it's there's always going to be a lot of people, especially the Golden Age, unfortunately. Like one of Batman's co-creators is actually pretty much overlooked all the time by the mainstream media, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, like, Bob Kane is the official creator of Batman. However, Bill Finger, the guy that wrote those original stories, came up with Bruce Wayne and Gotham City, and even depending on whose story you listen to, said, oh, let's not make him fly, let's make him just have a cape. So it depends on, there's a lot of different interpretations of what actually happened back then, but Bill Finger is certainly not given his due as a co-creator for Batman, which he did a lot of work, and especially Jerry Robinson, who just passed away, I believe, last week. He's an amazing artist who just drew, like, co-created the Joker, Robin, the Boy Wonder, so there's a lot of, and nobody knows who he is, unfortunately, in as far as mainstream appeal, and he's, because the problem with that is a lot of Golden Age artists were working under the name Bob Kane, so like they signed on for Bob Kane's team, and they would just do things, and Bob Kane would sign them,
I'd love to see what you would do with a Batman movie, if they said to you, we want you to write a Batman movie, what you could do with it. I bet you could create something really special.
Oh, it would be a lot of fun. I don't think there'd ever be that much pressure on. I would never have that much pressure in my life. That would be huge, especially to follow what's happened now with the Nolan work. I'd love to, work in that.
I mean, if they ever brought Catwoman back, I don't know who they'd get for Catwoman.
Well, she's coming in the new movie. Yeah, she's in the.
She is, and who's playing her?
Anne Hathaway is playing her.
Oh, that's right. That should be interesting.
So yeah, we'll have to see how they. I mean, we just saw a couple clips from her in the second trailer. So, but besides that, there's really not much we've seen yet. So it's very much looking forward to this, especially because this is the third in the trilogy, and this is going to be his last. So it's the first time really in comics where they're actually ending the story on purpose. You know, like normally it's like, oh no, we're going to do another sequel after this. Well, they'll probably do another Batman after this, but it will all likelihood be a different. Like, they'll start over again. You know, it'll be a different revamp of the movie now. So, they actually, in theory, I mean, they could even kill Batman if they wanted in this movie, you know, because they'll just have a different version come later.
And here's the whole Robin series. See, I always liked Burt Ward as Robin. I always thought Burt Ward. I never really got Chris O'Donnell as Robin. I don't know why. I think he was just so different than what
I'm not a big fan of those two movies in general, like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. They kind of fell off for me in... They got a little too silly for me at that point, and they lacked kind of. Batman Returns had a lot of silly parts in it with you know, the weird penguin commandos and things like that. But what it had was just a really pretty Tim Burton movie to look at, kind of on par with like Edward Scissorhands. It was like probably Tim Burton's best visual era, so the movie's just amazing to look at. And so any silliness goes right out the window. You can just watch it. For how pretty it is, you know.
Here's Arkham Asylum. Oh wow, there's just so much in this book. I mean, you just can go through it again and again and again and see something new every time. I know the price tag of $100 may seem a little daunting to people, but now what is this? Redbird? Is this Robin's car?
In the '90s, Robin was given essentially, even though he was only, I think...
Robin never had a car in the old Batman.
No, he had a cycle, but that was about it.
Oh, yeah, right.
And even when he went to college, he pretty much just drove a motorcycle, which was kind of, you know, taking a page out of Spider-Man, too. Like, Peter Parker drove a motorcycle for a long time, so kind of like the same kind of youthful excitement. But, in the '90s, they gave him a car that actually could disguise itself to look like a normal red car. So it was an interesting part of the character, because the character was, I think he was, because a lot of people don't realize this, but Wayne Manor is not actually in Gotham City itself. It's actually several miles outside of Gotham City in an area called Bristol Township. So
I guess everybody just assumes everything's in Gotham, yeah. Gotham yeah. City. Yeah. Here's the Gotham Harbor, and that's really cool, too. It's just shit. But I can take this book to the movie and just follow along. Like, I know where we are. I can pinpoint exactly where they are on the map. That's really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and actually, the map we used in there was actually printed in the comics before, so that was an established thing that they've used under Denny O'Neill. That's another one of the things we can credit to him as far as making Gotham this whole, actually try to feel like a real city. I believe, I want to say Elliot Brown designed that originally. I'd have to research that. He did a lot of the maps and schematics back then for the comics themselves, and he's still doing a lot of them.
Did you have to work with DC on this? Well, you already work for DC, don't you?
I just do freelance for them, so it's I'm not, you know.
But they had to did they have to approve the whole book?
Oh yeah, the book is officially licensed from DC itself. It was essentially the company Andrews McNeil and Lionheart Books, the packager, got together and said we want to do this. So they went to DC and approached them, said hey, we want to do a Batman type journal thing, and so then DC pulled me into it, and then we started just meeting and kind of expanding it from there. And but every step of the way, it was Steve Corte over at DC did great. He actually is not with DC anymore, but he was a really great editor. He just gave us so much freedom as far as we would turn in pages, and he'd essentially go, you know, ask us a couple questions about it, and pretty much let us go. You know, he said, okay, do that. It looks good.
That's great. It's great to get a lot of support about it. You know, you're going to undertake a massive thing like this.
Yeah, and it was nice too. He really understood what we were doing. He understood that this was Batman's voice, so it wasn't really subject to a lot of these books. You can change, like, you know, you can do editorial changes constantly and things like, oh, let's word this differently. But it's like, well, no, this is the way, you know, I'm trying to write in Batman's voice as much as possible. And he got that. He understood that, okay, this is Batman's voice. We have to leave this alone. He's not going to, you know, he's going to talk like Batman talks. He's not going to talk like a normal prose book, you know.
Now, did they actually kill off Batman in the comics?
At one point, Batman almost essentially died. He was actually, he wasn't dead. He was traveling through time. So he didn't really die. There was another story, there was a pivotal story in the '90s called Nightfall, where Batman has his back broken by the character Bane. And that's why that character brought so much excitement, because it was this huge crossover, and it was a big, and Batman was actually replaced by a different Batman, who was this other vigilante character named Azrael. And so that was, he became this new Batman for a time as like a more violent version of Batman. So after that, it was a couple of years of this storyline, then they brought the original Batman back. But then, yeah, recently in comics just a couple of years ago, or, yeah, not even, Bruce Wayne was thought killed, but he was actually sent traveling back through time. So he was still alive, and then he came back.
I mean, I still enjoy watching Superman things. I've watched all 10 years of Smallville, and I enjoyed that immensely. I mean, it was so different than anything with Superman I'd ever seen before. I mean, it's still very enjoyable. I mean, they've never really done other than an animated Batman. They've never really done a series, an up-to-date series. I mean, they did one in the 60s, but you know, I'd like to see a more serious Batman.
Like a live-action kind of. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they're probably reluctant to go that route just because of the movie franchises. I don't think they want to make.
You mean it would be too much Batman?
Or just like people thinking, oh, this is, you know, like a similar to a movie approach, but with lower budgets for the special effects. You know, like when people think live action Batman, they want to see the huge, especially after Dark Knight set box office records of being like the second highest grossing movie at that point. Under Titanic, you know.
Now, who would they actually get to play Batman anyway? I mean, it just wouldn't.
Yeah, that would be a. it's always really hard to cast in. That's actually. I mean, I like Christian Bale, all right, but he's just not. To me, he doesn't say Batman as much as, you know, as could possible. But I just don't know if it would even be possible to match what I'm picturing in my head from years and years of comics. You know.
Right. Well, how many comic books will you write for next year? I mean, will we see many comic books that you wrote next year, or some?
I've been doing a lot of books more than comics lately, so I've got a couple comic. I have a really important comic project to me. We're still trying to find the right artist for, and it's been a long process. This is a miniseries that will supposedly go for. It's actually been sold to DC Comics that I'm not a lot to talk about the subject of, but it's a creator-owned, so it's essentially my own characters in my own kind of world, and I'm really excited about that. We just have to find the right person to draw it for us.
What's your favorite part of this book?
There's probably I really like the book as a whole for everything they've done. Some of the favorite visual things I like are, I love that Flying Grayson's poster that I mentioned earlier. I think it looks amazing.
Right.
There's a George also made this gas mask at the hospital that's just incredible looking. And there's a couple pieces like that I love the new things like that that are in there. But I also, personally, as far as what I contributed to the book, I was really, there's a couple journal entries I'm pretty happy with. I like some of the, there's a journal entry where Batman's, there's a part in Batman's career where he was actually hooked on a steroid. And it was this, and it's this part where he's kicking this steroid habit where he's essentially going through withdrawal, which I really enjoyed writing this kind of weird Batman. There's another one where Batman's going a little crazy, and I really enjoyed writing that version. So it's kind of fun to just do these weird things. There's an entry written by Batgirl in there, which is a lot of fun to write just because it's after being so gloomy, and you know, it's nice to be write an upbeat little happy entry. You know? So there's that is one thing. We had to find a couple places in the book to put in some humor because it is, Batman lives in a very dark world, and it's, you kind of have to bring your audience out of that a little bit, or it's just going to be too much.
Now, these, I guess these are riddles. What do you call twins both named William? Are these actually have answers?
Oh, yeah. That's the riddle. That's the one we were talking about earlier, the Riddler's first riddle.
Right.
I believe he was giving Batman clues. I think there's a picture underneath it of
Double Bill tonight, yeah.
Yeah, and so the double bill was the twins Williams, and it was luring Batman to that particular theater, and there's so.
Like Cal's, we know where Cal's going on a date, the moon, you know.
Oh, that's the movies. So.
Oh, the movies. Oh, okay. It could be the moon too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah. Oh, how about that?
And that's actually from I believe Chuck Dixon wrote that comic. They retold the Riddler's origin, and so that was the first time, like, kind of with the Riddler's origin was told in like a real modern voice. So we use that example to make the riddle, so those are actually from the comics, but we just had the artist redesign the riddle itself so it looked really fancy and kind of interesting looking, more realistic.
Wow, you just did a great job with this book. I mean, it really is an awesome book. I mean, if you're a big Batman fan, I mean, there's no question you're going to want it. But, you know, there's just so much so much to it. I mean, you could look through it five times and miss something, yeah, and see it on the sixth time. You know,
there's lots of hidden things in there too. We put a lot of inside jokes at some comic. I know one website pointed out that Alexander Knox was one of the reporters that wrote one of the news articles, and he's actually a character from the first Batman movie. So there's a lot of things like that. Almost everybody that wrote an article is someone in comics, for instance. Like, that's one of the ways I try to get away with crediting the artists for their work. Like, I would write, if we're doing a fake newspaper article, it would be written by, say, the writer's first name and the artist's last name. So kind of things like that to kind of, you know.
Now, how many times will you go see the new movie?
It's going to be tough because we've got a little girl that's a year and a half old, so we don't get out of the house too much to see movies. But
right.
I'll definitely see it regular, and I'll definitely see it in IMAX. That's what I did with the last one.
Oh, it's going to be in IMAX too.
Yeah, they're filming specific scenes just for IMAX, so which is what they did in Dark Knight. So I'll definitely have to.
Have you ever met anybody from the Batman world at all?
You mean from the movies?
Yeah, like any actor, actress, anybody.
Yeah, when Batman Begins came out, I went to a screening with a friend of mine, and we saw it was Christopher Nolan, and Christian Bale came and spoke afterwards, and I actually got to talk to Christopher Nolan and tell him, you know, that was actually the time my first Batman comic was coming out that week that the movie was coming out. So I talked to him and said, you know, I hope what happened to me will happen to some other kid where they went and saw the Batman movie and then got their first Batman comic, you know, and hope that'll be your movie and my comic, you know.
That's really cool.
Yeah, there's been a couple times where I've got a chance to meet a lot of other celebrities. Honestly, as a comic book fan, it's bigger to me, growing up at least, when I would go to comic conventions and meet, you know, writers and artists that I was.
Well, how many comic books do you own currently?
It's a little different because DC Comics, I have all comic book forms, so about those I have about 11,000, I think.
11,000?
Yeah. And that's the stuff I've read.
Now, do you keep them in plastic, the ones that are worth a lot of money?
Yeah, there's the problem with comics these days is they're just really not worth too much unless they're older. And I don't have any from really like the 30s or 40s. I have a couple from the 50s and a lot from the 60s and 70s and things like that.
Now, you have, that's DC alone, 11,000?
Yeah.
How many Marvel ones?
Well, my Marvel I have all in trade paperback form, so, you know, like the collected editions. So I'm not sure how many of those I have. I know I've read over 4,000 Marvels or something around there. So it's not as much because I grew up with DC. And Marvel I kind of got into much later in life. I mean, I read some Marvel as a kid, but I didn't become, like, crazy about Marvel until much later. So when I realized, hey, I'm going to be writing comics, I really need to have both client bases there, you know?
Marvel lately, they're telling us now that we're not going to be able to sell Marvel comics in our store anymore, which is really bizarre.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, this is something new. They've decided they don't want to put them in independent bookstores anymore. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Marvel, but I'm not too happy with Marvel right now. Because they have so many comic books, and I mean, we get so many from them that,
yeah,
you know, I can't imagine not having any in the store. I mean, it's really going to be upsetting to people.
I haven't heard anything about that,
but
yeah, I've just been doing my latest Marvel project is that book, so it's more of, you know, it's the book market, it's a different.
I assume you were at one of the Comic Cons with this book.
Oh yeah, we did debut it at the New York Comic Con.
Now, did you sell a lot of copies of the book? I mean,
It was the only retailer to get it at that point, because this was before any bookstore got it. So Midtown Comics was the place we sold it at, their booth, and they said they pretty much sold almost all their copies, which is pretty great because we only did a half an hour signing there, and so it was kind of like in that time we had a pretty much steady flow of people, and you know, I was pretty happy with, especially because a lot of people are buying this, but will buy this book online because they can find cheaper deals. So it's nice when people buy it from a physical bookstore, you know.
Right. Well, we've been talking to Matthew Manning about his book, The Batman Files. It's in all your bookstores now. It is $100, but you get a lot for the money. So it's published by Anders McMeel Publishing. It's been great fun to talk to you, Matthew. I really appreciate this.
Oh, no problem.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.